handles on the back of my chair.
Enough discovering for one day.
When we cross through the doorway back into my room, I thank him. He nods at me.
Don't mention it.
He wheels me back to my bed.
You ready?
He says. I nod and brace myself. I know it's going to hurt when he picks me up, when he puts me down. Go for it, I say. He puts his arms underneath my legs. He tells me to put my arms around his neck, to hold on to him tightly. He leans over me, putting his other arm around my back. My forehead grazes his chin, and I can feel his stubble. I land back on my bed with a thud. He helps me move my legs straight and puts my blanket back on me.
How are you feeling?
He asks. I'm good, I say. Good. The truth is, I feel as if I'm about to cry. I am about to break down into tears the size of marbles. I don't want to be back in this bed. I want to be up and moving and living and doing and seeing. I have tasted the glory of sitting in the hallway. I don't want to be back in this bed.
Good,
he says.
So I think Deanna is taking over for me in an hour or so. She'll be in to check on you and see how you're doing. I'll tell Dr. Winters that it went well today. I bet they will have you headed for physical therapy in no time. Keep it up.
I know that a nurse telling a patient to keep it up is normal. I know that. I think that is what bothers me about it. Henry is by the door, heading out. Thanks, I call to him.
My pleasure,
he says.
See you tonight.
And then he seems to suddenly feel nervous.
I just mean, if you're awake.
I know what you mean, I say, smiling. I can't help but feel as if he's looking forward to seeing me. I suppose I could be wrong, but I don't think I am. See you tonight. He smiles at me, and then he's gone. I'm so jittery that I can't sit still, and yet sitting still is all I'm capable of. So I turn on the TV. I sit and wait for something interesting to happen. It doesn't. Deanna comes in a few times to check on me. Other than that, nothing happens. The hospital is a boring, 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 quiet, sterile, boring place. I turn the TV off and turn onto my side as best I can. I try to fall asleep. I don't wake up until Gabby comes in around 6:30. She's got a pizza in her arms and a stack of American magazines.
You snore so loud, Gabby says. I swear I could hear you down the hall.
Oh, shut up, I say. The other night when you slept here, Henry compared you to a bulldozer. She looks at me and puts the pizza and magazines down on the table.
Who is Henry?
The night nurse guy, I say. Nobody. The fact that I call him nobody makes it seem as if he's somebody. I realize that now. Gabby raises her eyebrow at me. Honestly, I say, my voice even. He really is just the night nurse.
Okay, she says.
And then I slump over and bury my red face in the palms of my hands. Ugh, I say, looking back up at her. I have a massive, embarrassing, soul-crushing crush on my night nurse. I am 11 weeks pregnant. The baby is healthy. Everything looks good. The doctor, Dr. Teresa Winthrop, assured me that I am not the only woman who has gotten almost out of her first trimester before figuring out she was pregnant. I feel a little bit better about that. On the way back to the car, Gabby stops me.
How are you feeling about all of this? You know that if you don't want to, you don't have to do this. 11 weeks is early.
She's not telling me anything I don't know. I've been pro-choice my entire life. I believe wholeheartedly in the right to choose. And maybe if I didn't believe I could give a child a home or a good life, maybe I'd avail myself of my other options. I don't know. We can't say what we would do in other circumstances. We can only know what we will do with the ones we face. I know I don't have to do this, I tell her. I am choosing this. She smiles. She can't help herself.
I have some time before I have to go back to the office, she says. Can I buy you lunch? That's okay, I tell her. I want to get home before Charlemagne pees all over your house. It's fine, she says. Mark didn't say anything this morning about feeling itchy, by the way. I'm convinced it's all in his head. I'm already planning to persuade him that we should keep both you and Charlemagne with us. We're near his office, actually. Should we go surprise him for lunch and begin our campaign? Plus, I want to see the look on his face when you tell him where we've been this morning. I'm honestly concerned that my dog is ruining your home. What's the point of owning your own place if you can't get a little pee on it? Gabby says.
Okay, but don't come crying to me when she stains the hardwood.
We get into the car and drive only a few blocks before Gabby pulls into an underground lot and parks. I've never seen Mark's office before. It occurs to me that I also haven't been to the dentist in a while. You know, while we're here, I say, I really should make an appointment to get my teeth cleaned. Gabby laughs as we get into the elevator. She presses the button for the fifth floor, but it isn't responding. The doors close, and we somehow end up going down to the lowest level of the garage. The doors open, and an elderly woman gets in. It takes her about 30 years. Gabby and I smile politely, and then Gabby hits the fifth floor button again, which now lights up, a bright and inviting orange.
Which floor? She asks the elderly lady.
3, please.
We head up, and the door opens again on the floor we got in on. Gabby turns to me and rolls her eyes.
If I knew it was going to be 10 stops on the elevator, I would have suggested we go eat first,
she whispers to me. I laugh. And there is Mark, kissing a blonde woman in a pencil skirt. Gabby left at around 10 tonight to go home to Mark. I haven't seen Mark since I've been in the hospital. It's not weird, necessarily, because Mark and I were never particularly close, but it seems strange that Gabby is so often here on nights and lunch breaks, and Mark hasn't even stopped by. Gabby keeps saying that he's been working late a lot. Apparently he had to attend a dental conference in Anaheim this week. I don't know much about the life of a dentist, but I always figured dentists were the kind of people who were home in time for dinner. I guess that's not the case with Mark. Either way, his working benefits me greatly, since Gabby spends her time with me instead, which is really all I want anyway. Since she left, I've just been reading the magazines she brought. I like these magazines much better than the British ones, which is good, because I slept through most of the day today, so I know I won't be tired for quite some time.
I knew you'd be up,
Henry says when he comes into the room. He's pushing a wheelchair. I thought you'd take the night off, I say. He shakes his head.
I went home this morning, slept my 8 hours, had some dinner, watched some TV. I got in a little while ago.
Oh, I say.
And I checked on all my other patients, and they are all sleeping and not in need of my assistance.
So, another lesson? I ask.
I'd call this more of an adventure.
He has a wild look in his eye, as if we are doing something we shouldn't be doing. It's exciting, the idea of doing something I shouldn't be doing. All I've been doing is healing. All right, I say. Let's do it. What do I need to do? He pulls the rail down on my bed. He moves my legs. We move the same way we moved this morning, only faster, easier, more familiar. I'm in the chair within a few seconds. I look down, my legs in front of me, in the chair. Henry grabs my blanket and puts it in my lap.
In case you get cold, he says.
And so I don't flash anyone, I say.
Well, that too, but I didn't want to say it.
He stands behind me, attaches my morphine bag to my chair, and pushes me forward. Where are we going? I ask.
Anywhere we want,
he says. We get out into the hallway.
So,
he says.
Where first?
Cafeteria, I say.
Do you really want more cafeteria food?
He asks. Good point. How about a vending machine? I offer. He nods, and away we go. I'm outside of my room. I'm moving. Some doctors and nurses stand outside a room or two, but for the most part the halls are empty. It's also quiet, except for the occasional regulatory beeping. But I feel as if I'm flying down a California freeway with the top down. Favorite movie, I say, as we make our way around one of the many corners of the hospital.
The Godfather,
he says with confidence. Boring answer, I tell him.
What? Why?
Because it's obvious. Everyone loves The Godfather.
Well, sorry,
he says to me.
I can't love a different movie just because everyone loves the movie I love.
I turn back to look at him. He makes a face at me. The heart wants what it wants, I guess, I say.
I guess,
he says.
You?
Don't have one, I say. Henry laughs.
You can't make me pick one if you don't have one.
Why not? It's a fair question. I just don't happen to have an answer.
Just pick one at random. One you like.
That's the problem. My answer is always changing. Sometimes I think my favorite movie is The Princess Bride. But then I think, no, Toy Story is obviously the best movie of all time. And then, other times, I'm convinced that no movie will ever be as good as Lost in Translation. I can never decide.
You think too much,
he says.
That's your problem. You're trying too hard to find the perfect answer when an answer will do.
What do you mean? I ask. We're stopped in front of a soda vending machine, but this isn't what I want. Wait, I meant a snack machine, not a Coke machine.
My apologies, Queen Hannah of the hallway,
he says, and pushes us forward.
If someone asks you your favorite movie, just say The Princess Bride.
But sometimes I'm not sure it is my favorite movie.
But it will do, is what I'm saying. It's like when I asked you what kind of pudding you liked, and you named all three flavors. Just pick a flavor. You don't need to find the perfect thing all the time. Just find one that works and go with it. If you had, we'd be on to favorite colors by now.
Your favorite color is navy blue, I say.
Yep,
he says.
But you can tell that from my scrubs, so you haven't convinced me you're telepathic.
What's mine? I ask him. I can see a vending machine at the end of the hall. I also really hope Henry has money, because I didn't bring any.
I don't know,
he says.
But I bet you it's between two colors.
I roll my eyes at him, but he can't see me. He's right. That's what's frustrating. Purple and yellow, I say.
Let me guess,
he says in a teasing voice.
Sometimes you like yellow, but then, when you see purple, you think maybe that's your favorite.
Oh, shut up, I say. They are both pretty colors.
And,
he says as we reach the machine,
either of them would suffice.
He pulls a dollar out of his pocket.
I have $1,
he says.
We have to share.
Some date you are, I joke. And immediately wish I could take it back. He laughs and lets it go.
What will it be?
I search the machine. Salty, sweet, chocolate, peanut butter, pretzels, peanuts. It's impossible. I look back at him. You're gonna be mad, I say. He laughs.
You have to pick one. I only have a dollar.
I look at all of them. I bet Henry likes Oreos. Everyone likes Oreos. Literally every human. Oreos, I say.
Oreos it is,
he says. He puts the dollar into the slot and punches the buttons. The Oreos fall just in front of me, at my level. I pull them out of the drawer and open them. I give him one.
Thank you,
he says. Thank you, I say. You paid for them. He bites it. I eat it whole.
There's no wrong way to eat an Oreo,
he says. That's Reese's. There's no wrong way to eat a Reese's, I correct him. Oh, man, we should have gotten Reese's. He pulls another dollar out of his scrubs and puts it into the machine. What? You said you only had a dollar. You lied.
Oh, calm down. I was always going to buy you two things,
he says.
I'm just trying to help you be decisive.
He laughs at me as he says it, and I open my mouth wide. Outraged, I hit him on the arm. Jerk, I say.
Hey, he says, I bought you two desserts.
The Reese's fall.
I grab them and give him one again. You're right, I say. And you took me on a journey into the hallway, which you probably weren't supposed to do.
It wasn't specifically sanctioned, no,
he says, biting his peanut butter cup. Mine is already gone. I practically swallowed it whole. I could ask him, right now, why he's being so nice to me, why he's taking so much time with me, but I'm afraid if I call attention to it, it will stop happening. So I don't say anything. I just smile at him. Will you take me the long way back? I ask.
Of course,
he says.
Do you want to see how far you can wheel yourself before your arms get tired?
Yeah, I say. That sounds great. He's a great nurse, an attentive listener, because that is truly all I want in this world. I want to try to do something myself, knowing that when I have nothing left, someone will take me the rest of the way. He turns me around to face the right direction, and he stands behind me.
Go for it,
he says.
I got you.
I push, and he follows me. I push, and I push, and I push. We get through two big hallways before I need a rest.
I'll take it from here,
he says, grabbing the back of my chair and pushing me forward. He leads us to an elevator and pushes the call button.
You sleepy? You want to head back?
I turn as best I can to look at him. Let's say I'm not sleepy. What would we do? He laughs. The elevator opens. He pushes me in.
I should have known you wouldn't choose sleep.
You didn't answer my question. What would we do? He ignores me for the moment and pushes the button for the second floor. We descend. When the door opens, he pushes me out and down a long hallway. You're really not going to tell me? Henry smiles and shakes his head. Then we turn a corner and he opens a door. The cold, fresh air rushes over me. He pushes me through. We are on a smoking patio, a tiny, dirty, dingy, sooty, beautiful, refreshing, life-affirming smoking patio. I breathe in deeply. I can hear cars driving by. I can see city lights. I can smell tar and metal. Finally, there are no walls or windows between me and the spinning world. Despite my best efforts, I feel myself tearing up. The air funneling in and out of my lungs feels better, brighter than all the air I've inhaled since I woke up. I close my eyes and listen to the sounds of traffic. When a few of my tears fall from my eyes, Henry crouches down next to me. He is on my level. Once again, we are face to face. He pulls a tissue out of his pocket and hands it to me. And right then, as his hand grazes mine and I catch his eye, I don't need to wonder what would happen if he and I met at a dinner party. I know what would happen. He would walk me home.
Ready?
He says.
To go back?
Yeah, I say, because I know it's time, because I know he has a job to do, because I know we aren't supposed to be out here. Not because I'm ready. I'm not ready. But as he pushes me through that door and it closes behind us, I am, for the first time, so full of joy to be alive that I'd be happy going just about anywhere. You're a great nurse, I tell him as we head back. Do you know that?
I hope so,
he says.
I love my job. It's the only thing I've ever really felt I was meant for.
We get back to my room. He puts my wheelchair by my bed. He puts his arms underneath me.
Put your arms around my neck,
he says, and I do. He lifts me and holds me there for a moment, the full weight of my body in his arms. I am so close to him that I can smell his soap on his skin, the chocolate still faintly on his breath. His eyelashes are longer and darker than I noticed before, his lips fuller. He has a faint scar under his left eye. He puts me down in my bed. I swear he holds on to me just a moment longer than he needs to. It is perhaps the most romantic moment of my life, and I'm in a hospital gown. Life is unpredictable beyond measure.
Excuse me, comes a stern voice from the hallway. Both Henry and I look up to see a female nurse standing in the doorway to my room. She is older and a bit weathered. She has her light-colored hair pulled up in a butterfly clip. She is wearing pale pink scrubs and a patterned matching scrub jacket. Henry pulls away from me abruptly.
I thought Eleanor was covering for you the second half of the night, the nurse says.
He shakes his head.
You might be thinking of Patrick. Patrick needs his shift covered until 7.
Okay, she says. Can I speak to you when you're done here?
Sure,
Henry says.
I'll be right there.
The nurse nods and leaves. Henry's demeanor changes.
Good night,
he says as he moves to leave. He's almost out the door when I call to him.
Thank you, I say. I really...
Don't mention it,
he says, not looking back at me, already out the door. Gabby is throwing things around the house. Big things. Porcelain things. They are crashing and shattering. Charlemagne is by my feet. We are standing at the door to the guest room. I'm trying to stay out of it, but I'm pretty much in it. Gabby never went back to work. I drove us home while she stared straight ahead, virtually oblivious to the world. She didn't say much all afternoon. I kept trying to ask her if she was all right. I kept trying to offer her food or some water, but she kept refusing. She's been as responsive as a statue all afternoon. And then, the second Mark came through the door and said,
Let me explain.
That's when she reanimated.
I'm not interested in anything you have to say, Gabby said.
And he had the gall to say,
Come on, Gabby, I deserve a chance to...
That's when she threw a magazine at him. I couldn't blame her. Even I would have started throwing things at him then, when I heard those stupid words come out of his mouth. She started by throwing whatever was nearby. More magazines, a book that was on the coffee table. Then she threw the remote control. It cracked, and the batteries went flying. That's when Charlemagne and I hightailed it to safer ground.
Why is there a dog here?
Mark asked. He started scratching his wrist slowly. I don't even think he knew he was doing it.
Don't ask about the fucking dog, Gabby said. She was here all night and you didn't even notice, so just shut the fuck up about the dog, okay?
Gabby, talk to me.
Screw you.
Why were you at my office today?
He asked her.
Oh, you've got to be kidding me. You've got a lot worse problems than how you got caught.
That's when she walked into the kitchen and started breaking big stuff. Porcelain stuff. Which brings us to now.
Who is she?
Gabby screams. Mark doesn't answer. He can't look at her. She pauses ever so briefly and looks around at the mess. Her shoulders slump. She can see me off to the side. She catches my eye.
What am I doing?
She says. She doesn't say it to me or Mark, really. She says it to the room, the house. I take advantage of the moment and walk through the shards to put my arms around her. Mark moves toward us, too.
No,
I say, abruptly and with force.
Don't you touch her.
He backs away.
You're going to move out?
Gabby says to him as I hold her. I start rubbing her back, trying to soothe her, but she pushes me away. She gathers her strength.
Get your shit and leave, she says.
This is my place, too, Mark says. And I'm just asking for a few minutes to talk this out.
Get your shit and leave,
Gabby says. Her voice is strong and stoic. She is a force to be reckoned with. Mark considers fighting back more. You can see it on his face. But he gives up and goes into the bedroom.
You're doing the right thing, I tell her. I know that, she says.
She sits down at the dining room table. Catatonic once again. Charlemagne starts walking toward us, but Gabby sees her before I do.
No!
She shouts at the dog.
Be careful!
She stands up and gently walks over to Charlemagne and picks her up. She carries her in her arms over the broken plates.
She sits back down at the table with Charlemagne in her lap. Mark flies through various rooms in the house, getting his things. He slams doors. He sighs loudly. Now seems like the time to start realizing that I never liked him. This goes on for at least 45 minutes. The house is silent except for the sounds of a man moving out. Gabby is practically frozen still. The only time she moves is to reposition Charlemagne in her lap. I stand by, close, ready to move or to speak at a moment's notice. Finally, Mark comes out into the living room. We stare at him from the dining room table.
"I'm leaving," he says.
Gabby doesn't say anything back. He waits, hoping for something. He gets nothing from her. He walks to the front door, and Charlemagne jumps down onto the floor. "Charlemagne, no," I say. I have to say it twice before she stays put. Mark looks at her, clearly still confused about why there is a dog named Charlemagne in the house, but he knows he won't get any answers. He opens the front door. He's almost gone by the time Gabby speaks up.
"How long has this been going on?"
she asks him. Her voice is strong and clear. It does not waver. It does not break. She is not about to burst into tears. She is fully in control, at least for this moment. He looks at her and shakes his head. He looks up at the ceiling. There are tears in his eyes. He rubs them away and sniffs them back up.
"It doesn't matter," he says.
His voice, too, is strong, but it is full of shame. That much is clear.
"I said, how long has this been going on?"
"Gabby, don't do this."
"How long?"
Mark looks at his feet and then at her.
"Almost a year," he says.
"You can go," she says.
He turns away and does just that. She goes to the window to watch him leave. When he's finally gone, she turns to me.
"I'm so sorry, Gabby," I say to her. "I'm so sorry. He's an asshole."
Gabby looks at me.
"You slept with somebody's husband," she says.
She doesn't need to draw any direct conclusions from this. She doesn't need to say out loud what I know she's thinking in her head.
"Yep,"
I say, both owning my actions and feeling deep shame for them.
"And it was wrong, just like this was wrong." "But I told you it didn't mean you were a bad person," she says. "I told you that you could still be a wonderful, beautiful person."
I nod.
"Yeah, you did. And you did this to somebody."
I want to claim that the situation is different. I want to say that what I did with Michael isn't as bad as what this other woman has done with Mark. I want to, once again, hide behind the fact that I didn't know. But I did know, and what I did was no different from this. I slept with someone's husband. I shouldn't have done that. And now I'm having a baby by that man, and I'm going to raise that baby. Pretending this child isn't the result of a mistake I made doesn't make it any less true. And I know now that I have to face things. I have to admit things in order to move forward.
"Yes," I say.
"I did a terrible thing, just like Mark and that woman did a terrible thing to you." Gabby looks at me. I pull her over to the sofa and I sit us both down.
"I made a mistake. And when I did, you saw that I was still a good person, and you reserved your judgment because you had faith in me. That was a wonderful gift, your belief in me. It made me believe in myself. It made me start to change the things I've needed to change. But you don't have to do that for them. You can just hate them."
I swear, she almost smiles.
"We can both just hate them for as long as we need to, and then one day, when we feel stronger, we'll probably forgive them for being imperfect, for doing a terrible thing. One day, sooner than you think, I bet we'll go so far as to wish them the best and not give them another thought, because we'll have moved on with our lives. But you don't have to believe that right now. You can just hate him. And I can hate him for what he did to you. And maybe one day he'll change. He'll be a person who did something in the past that he would never, ever do again.
She looks at me.
Or he'll just be shitty forever, and you're better off being as far away from him as possible, I tell her. There's that theory, too.
She smiles a smile so small and so quick that I start to question if I really saw it.
I'm sorry, she says finally. I didn't mean to bring you into this. I'm sorry.
Don't give it another thought, I say. Gabby cries into her hands and then collapses into my arms.
He's not even allergic to dogs, she says. I've wanted a dog for years, and I couldn't because of him. But I swear it's all in his head. I bet you he's not even allergic to them.
Well, now you've got one, I say. So there's a silver lining. Why don't we just sit here and think of silver linings for right now? What's another one? Did he always forget to take out the trash? Did he leave his wet towel on the bed? She looks up at me.
His penis is small, she says. Seriously, like a golf pencil.
And then she starts laughing.
Oh, it feels good to admit that. I don't have to keep pretending his penis isn't small.
I start laughing with her. That wasn't exactly where I thought you were going to go with this, but okay, that's a good one. Gabby laughs. It's a deep belly laugh.
Oh, God, Hannah, she says. The first time I saw it, I thought, where's the rest of it?
I laugh so hard when she says this that I have to struggle to breathe. You are making this up, I say.
Nope,
she says, her hands up in the air as if she's swearing to God.
He just has a terrible penis.
Both of us are laughing so hard that tears are coming out of our eyes. And then, abruptly, it is time to stop. I can see the mood change much the same way you can feel summer turn to fall. One day, everything's sunny, and then suddenly, it's not.
Oh, Hannah,
she says, burying herself into my chest. Charlemagne sits at our feet.
Shh,
I say, rubbing her back.
It's okay. It's going to be okay. I'm not sure that's true,
she says into my chest.
It is,
I say.
It is true.
She looks up at me, her eyes now bloodshot and glassy. Her face is splotchy. She looks desperate and sick. I've never seen her like this. She's seen me like this, but I've never seen her like this.
I know it's going to be okay, because you are Gabrielle Jeanette Hudson. You are unstoppable. You are the strongest woman I've ever known. Strongest person, she says.
Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I quite heard her.
I'm the strongest person you know, she says, wiping her eyes. Gender is irrelevant.
She's absolutely right. She is the strongest person I know. Her gender is irrelevant.
You're right, I say.
Just one more reason I know you are going to get through this. She starts heaving tears. She's hyperventilating.
Maybe he had a good reason, or there is something I misunderstood.
I want to tell her that she could be right, that maybe there is some piece of information that makes all of this better. I want to tell her that because I want her to be happy. But I also know it's not true. And part of loving someone, part of being the recipient of trust, is telling the truth even when it's awful.
He was cheating on you for almost a year, I tell her.
He didn't make a one-time mistake or get confused. She looks up at me and starts crying again.
So my marriage is over?
That's up to you, I say. You have to decide what you will tolerate and what you can live with. Why don't you try to relax, and I'll get you some dinner?
No,
she says.
I can't eat.
Well, what can I do for you?
Just sit here,
she says.
Just sit next to me.
You got it, I tell her.
Charlemagne, too,
she says. I get up and pick up Charlemagne. The three of us sit here on the couch.
My husband is cheating on me, and you're pregnant by a married man.
Gabby says. I close my eyes, taking it in.
Life sucks, she says.
Sometimes, yeah, I tell her. We are both quiet.
It hurts,
she says. She starts crying again.
It hurts so bad. Deep in my gut, it hurts.
I know, I tell her. You and I are a team, right? Whatever you face in life, I'll face it with you. Everything that you were prepared to do for me last night, I am prepared to do for you today. So count on me, okay? Let's get through this together. Lean on me. Squeeze my hand.
She looks at me and smiles.
When it hurts so bad you don't think you can stand it, I say, squeeze my hand.
I put my hand out for her, and she takes it. She starts crying again, and she squeezes. And I think to myself that if, by being here, I have taken away 1/100th of the pain that Gabby feels, then maybe I have more of a life's purpose than I ever thought.
Divide the pain in two, I tell her, and give half of it to me.
Gabby comes in on Saturday morning, and before she can even get into the room, I tell her to stop. Deanna is standing by my bed.
Wait, I say to Gabby. Wait right there.
Deanna smiles and puts out her hand.
You ready?
She says. I nod. Deanna helps me get my feet on the ground. I push my weight into Deanna's hands, and she helps me put weight on my feet. I'm standing up. Actually standing up. Not without resting on another human being, but still, I'm standing up. She and I have been practicing all morning.
Okay, I say. I gotta sit down.
Deanna helps me rest back on the bed. The relief is immense.
Oh my God!
Gabby says, clapping for me as if I'm a child.
Look what you did! This is nuts!
I smile and laugh. My energy and Gabby's excitement must be infectious, because Deanna is laughing and smiling with us.
It's crazy, right? I say. I've been practicing as much as possible. This morning, Dr. Winters was giving me some tips on how to steady myself. I can't move just yet, really, but I can stand.
Wow,
Gabby says, putting down her purse. She moves toward us. Deanna helps me get back into bed.
I'm so impressed, Gabby says. You're ahead of schedule.
I'll come by to check on you soon, Deanna says. Good job today.
Thank you, I tell her as she leaves. When she's gone, I tell Gabby about last night.
Henry took me outside, I say.
You walked outside?
No, I say, in a wheelchair. He took me out on the smoking patio.
Oh,
she says.
This is not sounding nearly as romantic as it felt.
Oh, never mind, I say. You had to be there.
She laughs.
Well, I'm proud of you that you stood up today.
I know. Before you know it, I'll be crawling and eating solid foods.
Well, don't do it when I'm not here, she says. You know I like to get that stuff on videotape.
I laugh. Just be glad you don't have to change my diaper, I tell her.
I'm just making a joke, but it hits a little too close to home. I still can't get to the bathroom on my own.
How are you?
I ask, inviting her to sit down.
How is Mark?
He's good,
she says.
Yeah.
Something seems off. What's on your mind? I ask her.
No, nothing,
she says.
He seems very... I don't know. I think the accident, all of this craziness, maybe it jolted something in him. He's been very sweet, very attentive, bringing me flowers. He bought me a necklace the other day.
She starts playing with the one around her neck. It's a string of gold with a diamond at the center.
That one? I say, leaning forward. I take the diamond in my hand.
Wow, is that a real diamond? I know, she says. I made a joke when he gave it to me, like, okay, what did you do wrong?
I laugh. On TV, it's always that a man comes home with flowers and jewelry when he invites his boss over for Thanksgiving dinner without asking you first or something.
Right? She says, laughing. Maybe he's cheating on me. I'll have to go home and look at all of his shirt collars for lipstick stains, right?
Yeah, I say. If soap operas are any indication, you will find bright red lipstick stains on his collar if he's cheating.
Gabby laughs. For a moment, I know we are both thinking of the fact that I was once the woman wives watch out for. that I lost a married man's baby. Sometimes I wonder if this accident wasn't a clean slate, if it wasn't permission to start again, to do better. And then I wonder, if it is a clean slate, what am I going to do with it? Well, what are you doing here? I ask her. Don't hang out with your lame best friend. Go hang out with your thoughtful, romantic husband. I mean, he could be buying you cashmere and chocolate right now.
No, right now I'd rather be here. I'd rather be with you. Besides, Mark said he had to go into work today. Said he'd be unavailable until late tonight. There were billing problems at work, I guess. He doesn't have an office manager or someone to do that stuff?
Gabby thinks it over.
Well, no, he does, she says. But he says lately he needs more time to look over their work. So, what should we do today? Should I get us a book to read together? Are we watching Law and Order?
I shake my head. Nope. We're going on an adventure, I tell her.
Where are we going?
Wherever we want, I tell her, and I point to the wheelchair in the corner. She brings it over, and I scooch myself closer to the edge of the bed. Can you pull the railing down? I ask her. It's that button there, and then you just press down. She's got it. Now, just move the wheelchair to the side, just to the... yeah. I swing my legs down off the bed. Sorry, one last thing. Can you just grab me around my waist? I can do this. I just need a little bit of help. She grabs me under my arms.
Ready?
She says. Yep, I say. And at the same time Gabby lifts me, I push myself up. It's not graceful. It's actually quite painful, very noisy, and I end up with my ass half hanging out of my gown, but I'm in the seat. I'm mobile. Can you... I say, gesturing toward the half of my gown.
Oh, right,
Gabby says, and she moves it as I try to lift myself just a little to get situated. Thanks, I say. Now, can you take my morphine bag and put it on my chair here? She does. Ready? I ask her.
Ready,
she says. Oh, I say, right before I start to push. Do you have dollar bills?
Yeah, she says. I think I have one or two. Why, are we going to a strip club?
I laugh as she grabs her purse. And then we are off. I see Deanna in the hallway, and she tells me not to go too far. I lead us down the hallway and to the right, just as Henry led me the other day.
Do you have a favorite movie?
I ask Gabby. If I had to guess, I'd say her favorite movie is When Harry Met Sally.
When Harry Met Sally,
she says.
Why do you ask?
I don't know what my favorite movie is, I say.
Why does that matter? Lots of people don't have a favorite movie.
But, like, even for the purpose of the conversation, I can't just pick one. I can't just decide on a movie to say is my favorite.
I hope it isn't news to you that you're indecisive.
I laugh. Henry says that you don't need the answer. You just need an answer.
Henry, Henry, Henry,
Gabby says, laughing at me. We come to an intersection in the hallway, and I veer left. I'm pretty sure the vending machines are to the left. Hardy har har, but I'm asking an honest question, I tell her. I'm still pushing myself down the hall. I've still got the strength to keep going.
What are you actually asking me?
Do you think it's true that you don't need the perfect answer, but just, you know, an answer?
To your favorite movie? Yes. But sometimes there is only one answer. So I don't think this is a universal philosophy.
Like what?
Like who you marry, for one. That's the biggest example that comes to mind.
You think there is only one person for everyone?
You don't?
The way she asks me this, it's as if it has never occurred to her that I might not. I might as well have said, you think we're breathing oxygen?
I don't know, I say. I know I did think that at one time, but I'm not sure anymore. Oh, she says. I guess I never considered the alternative. I just assumed, you know, God or fate or life or whatever you want to call it leads you to the person you were meant to be with.
That's how you feel about Mark?
I think Mark is the person life led me to, yeah. He's the only one for me. If I thought there was someone else better suited for me, why would I have married him, you know? I married him because he's the one.
So he's your soulmate. She thinks about it.
Yes. I mean, yeah. I guess you'd say that's a soulmate. What if you two end up getting divorced? Why would you say a thing like that? I'm just asking a hypothetical. If there is only one person for everyone, what happens when soulmates can't make it work?
If you can't make it work, you aren't soulmates, she tells me.
I hear her out. I get it. It makes sense. If you believe in fate, if you believe something is pushing you towards your destiny, that would include the person you're supposed to spend the rest of your life with. I get it. But not cities, I say.
Huh?
You don't have to find the perfect city to live in. You just have to find one that will work.
Right,
she says. So I can just pick one and leave it at that, I say. I don't have to test them all out until something clicks. She laughs.
No.
I think I've been jumping from place to place, thinking that I'm supposed to find the perfect life for myself, that it's out there somewhere and I have to find it. And it has to be just so, you know?
I know that you've always been searching for something, yeah?
Gabby says.
I always assumed you'd know it when you found it.
I don't know. I'm starting to think maybe you just pick a place and stay there. You pick a career and do it. You pick a person and commit to him.
I think as long as you're happy and you're doing something good with your life, it really doesn't matter whether you went out and found the perfect thing or you chose what you knew you could make work for you.
Doesn't it scare you, I ask her, to think that you might have gone in the wrong direction and missed the life you were destined for? Gabby thinks about it, taking my question seriously.
Not really,
she says. Why not?
I don't know. I guess because life's short, and you just kind of have to get on with it.
So should I move to London or not? I ask her. She smiles.
Oh, I see where this is going. If you want to go to London, you should. But that's as much as you'll get from me. I don't want you to go. I want you to stay here. It rains a lot there. You know, for what it's worth.
I laugh at her. Okay, fair enough. We have a bigger problem than London, anyway.
We do?
We're lost, I say. Gabby looks left and then right. She can see what I see. All the hallways look the same. We're in no man's land.
We're not near the vending machines?
She asks. Hell if I know, I say. I have no idea where we are.
Okay, she says, taking hold of my chair. Let's try to get ourselves out of this mess.
Gabby insisted on going to work today. I tried to persuade her to stay home, not to put extra pressure on herself, but she said that the only way she could feel remotely normal was to go to work. Ethan called me twice yesterday, and I didn't call him back. I texted him that I couldn't talk. I fell asleep last night knowing I'd have to face him today. I mean, if I keep avoiding him, he'll know something is up. So I woke up this morning, resolved to work this out. I called Ethan and asked if he was free tonight. He told me to come by his place at around 7, which means I have the rest of the day to call Michael. I want to have answers for Ethan's questions when he asks. I want to have all of my ducks in a row. And this is a big duck. I take a shower. I take Charlemagne for a walk. I stare at my computer, reading the internet for what feels like hours. When it's 6 o'clock in New York, when I know Michael will be leaving work, I pick up my phone. I sit down on my bed and dial. It rings and rings and rings. And then it goes to voicemail. On some level, I'm relieved because I don't want to have this conversation at all. Hi, Michael. It's Hannah. Call me back when you have a minute. We have something we need to talk about. Okay, bye. I throw myself backward onto the bed. My pulse is racing. I start thinking of what I'll do if he never calls me back. I start imagining that maybe he will make this decision for me. Maybe I'll call him a few times, leave a few messages, and he will just never call back. And I will know that I tried to do the right thing, but was unable to. I could live with that. My phone rings.
Hannah, he says the moment I say hello. His voice is stern, almost angry. We're done. You said so yourself. You can't call me.
I finally have things back on track with my family. I'm not going to mess that up again.
Michael, I say to him, just hold on 1 minute, okay? Now I'm pissed.
Okay,
he says. I'm pregnant, I tell him finally. He's so quiet, I think the line has gone dead.
I'll call you back in 3 minutes,
he says, and then he hangs up. I pace around the room. I feel a flutter in my stomach. The phone rings again. Hi, I say.
Okay, so what do we do?
He asks. I can hear that he's in a closed space. His voice is echoing. He sounds as if he's in a bathroom. I don't know, I say.
I can't leave my wife and children,
he says adamantly. I'm not asking you to, I tell him. I hate this conversation. I have been working to put this behind me, and now I'm right back in the middle of it.
So what are you saying?
He asks. I'm not saying anything except that I thought you should know. It seemed wrong not to tell you.
I can't do this,
he says.
I made a mistake being with you. I can see that now. It was my fault. I shouldn't have done it. It was a mistake. Jill knows what I did. We're finally in a good place. I love my children. I cannot let anything ruin that.
I'm not asking anything of you, I say to him. That's the truth. I just thought you should know.
Okay,
he says. He is quiet for a moment, and then, timidly, asks me what he's probably wanted to ask me since I brought this up.
Have you considered not having the baby?
If you're going to ask me to have an abortion, Michael, you should at least say the word. Such a coward.
Have you considered having an abortion?
He asks. No, I tell him. I'm not considering having an abortion.
What about adoption?
Why do you care? I ask him. I'm having the baby. I'm not asking for your money or your attention or support, okay?
Okay,
he says.
But I don't know how I feel about having a baby out there.
These are the sorts of things that people should really be thinking about before they have sex, but I'm one to talk. Well, then step up to the plate and deal with it or don't, I say. That's your business.
I suppose it's no different from donating sperm,
he says. He's not talking to me. He's talking to himself. But you know what? I don't want him to help me raise this baby, and he doesn't want to help me. Clearly, he's just looking to absolve himself of any guilt or responsibility, and if that's what it takes to make this simple, then I will help him do just that. Think of it like that, I tell him. You donated sperm.
Right,
he says.
That's all it is.
I want to tell him he's a complete ass, but I don't. I let him tell himself whatever he needs to. I know that this baby could ruin his family. I don't want that. That's the truth. I don't want to break up a family regardless of who is right and wrong. And I don't need him. And I'm not sure that my child is better off having him around. He hasn't shown himself to be a very good man. Okay, I say.
Okay,
he says. Just as I'm about to get off the phone, I say one thing for my unborn kid. If you ever change your mind, you can call me, if you want to meet the baby. And I hope that if he or she wants to meet you one day, you'll be open to it.
No,
he says. His answer jars me. What?
No,
he says again.
You are making the choice to have this baby. I do not want you to have it. If you have it, you have to deal with the child not having a father. I'm not going to live my life knowing that any day a kid could show up.
Classy, is all I say.
I have to protect what I already have,
he says.
Are we done here?
Yeah, I tell him. We're done. We are lost in the maternity ward, and we can't seem to find our way out. First, we were stuck in the delivery department. Now we're outside the nursery. The last thing I want to do right now is look at beautiful, precious babies. But I notice Gabby is no longer behind me. She's staring.
We are going to start trying soon, she says.
She's not even looking at me. She's looking at the babies. What are we going to start trying to do? She looks at me as if I'm so stupid I'm embarrassing her.
No, Mark and I, we're going to try to have a baby.
You want to have a kid?
Yeah, she says. I was going to ask what you thought when you got here, but I didn't get a chance before the accident, and then when you woke up...
Right, I say. I don't want her to say it out loud. The inference is enough.
But you think you're ready? That's so exciting.
My own ambivalence about a baby doesn't for a minute take away from the joy of her having one.
A little half Gabby, half Mark? I add. Wow. I know. It's a really exciting thought. Super scary, too. But really exciting.
So you'll be doing the old... Actually, is there even a popular euphemism for trying to have a baby?
I don't know, she says. But yes, we'll be doing the old...
Wow, I say again.
I just can't believe that we are old enough to the point where you're going to actually try to get pregnant. I know, she says. You spend your whole life learning how not to get pregnant, and then one day you suddenly have to reverse all of that training.
Well, this is awesome, I say. You and Mark are so good together. You're going to be great parents.
Thank you, she says,
and squeezes my shoulder. A nurse comes up to us.
Which one are you visiting? She asks. Oh, no, Gabby says. Sorry, we are just lost. Can you point us back to general surgery?
Down the hall, take your first right, then your second left. You'll see a vending machine. Follow that hall to the end, take a left. The directions go on and on. Clearly, I took us much farther away than I meant to.
Okay, Gabby says. Thank you.
She turns to me.
Let's go.
We go past what looks like a neonatal unit, maybe intensive care, and then we go through double doors and find ourselves in the children's ward.
I don't think this is the right way, I say. She said there was a left up here somewhere.
I look over at the nurses and then peek through the windows as we move farther down the hall. It's mostly toddlers and elementary school-age kids. I see a few teenagers. Almost all of them are in hospital beds, hooked up to machines, as I have been. A lot of them wear stockings or caps. It occurs to me that they are covering their bald heads.
Okay, Gabby says. You're right, we're lost.
I pull over to the side of the hallway.
I'm just going to go ask a nurse for a map, Gabby says.
Okay, I say. From my vantage point, I can see into one room with two kids in it. The kids are talking. Two preteen girls in separate beds. A doctor is standing to the side, talking to a set of parents. Both parents look confused and distraught. The doctor leaves. As he does, I can see there is a nurse standing with them. The nurse starts to leave, too, and the parents catch her at the door. They are close enough to me now that I can make out the conversation.
What did all of that mean?
The mom says. The nurse speaks gently. As Dr. McKenzie said, it's a bone cancer mostly found in adolescents. It can sometimes occur in families. It's rare, but possible that multiple siblings may develop it. That's why he wants to see your younger daughter, too, just to be sure. The mom starts crying. The dad rubs her back.
Okay, thank you,
the dad says. The nurse doesn't leave then, though. She stays.
Sophia is a fighter. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. And Dr. McKenzie is an exceptional pediatric oncologist. I mean exceptional. If it was my daughter here, my daughter is 8. Her name is Madeline. I'm telling you, I'd be doing exactly what you were doing. I'd put her in the hands of Dr. McKenzie.
Thank you, the mom says. Thanks.
The nurse nods. If you need anything, if you have any questions, just page me. I'll answer any I can, and if I can't, she looks them in the eye, assuring them,
I will get Dr. McKenzie to explain.
In simple terms, if he can manage it, she says, making a joke. The dad smiles. The mom, I notice, has stopped crying. They end their conversation just as Gabby comes back with the map. Both Gabby and the nurse can now tell I've been eavesdropping. I quickly look away,
But it doesn't matter. I've been caught. Gabby pushes my chair down the hallway.
I can do it, I say.
I take the wheels. When we are far enough away, I ask her, was that the